Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Voy a decir algo. No voy a dimitir. No voy a dimitir. No voy a dimitir. No voy a dimitir. No voy a dimitir.
Welcome to La Liga Lowdown. It's our Monday free pod recapping the weekend's action. But before we do begin, we have to update you on the latest in the scandal that is Luis Rubiales and the fallout from the Women's World Cup final win. Roman Darker joins me here today. We'll get his thoughts in just a moment, but it's worth recapping since we last spoke to you. If you're paid subscribers, you will have heard a podcast in midweek where Rory and myself talked at quite great length about Rubiales and the state of affairs in the Spanish Football Federation. We are all angered that the image of Spanish football has been dragged through the mud by Rubiales and the heads of the RFEF in the last few days. It's made global news across the world, UK, US, everywhere is talking about it, and obviously not in good terms. We've had the whole world of women's football come out in support of Jenny Hermoso, and we'd like to reiterate our support for her. We are with you. Since our last podcast, since our last articles, Rubiales refused to resign at that extraordinary general meeting on Friday. Then Jenny Hermoso and the women, I think up to 81 signatories of a FootPro statement, came out and said the kiss was not consensual and Rubiales has acted inappropriately and he must go. Then we had FIFA finally act and provisionally suspend him pending an investigation. And then, a bit like rats fleeing a sinking ship, Luis de la Fuente and then Jorge Bilda, the coaches of the men's and women's national teams, of course, who were seen applauding Rubiales' statements on Friday. They brought out statements themselves condemning the actions as inappropriate and saying that things should improve, of course, but very, very few believe their words are very sincere there. In the meantime as well, Jorge Bilda's coaching staff, his cuerpo técnico, all resigned, in effect, leaving him alone in charge of the women's team. So he has no coaching staff and he has no players. So as we stand right now, the women's team is essentially Jorge Bilda. So make of that what you will. More will come from this story, of course, but we just want to keep you up to date on that, especially for those who haven't upgraded, and we encourage you please to do so. You'll get access to all of our content there on Substack. We'll see what happens in the coming days and weeks. The FIFA investigation probably will take some time, but I think the message is clear from all of Spanish football lovers. Se acabó. Roman, your thoughts on the matter? You, of course, live in Spain and are much closer to the reaction than myself. It's been a pretty dark few days from my perspective. How's it been for you?
Yeah, pretty much the same. I mean, it's all people talk about in relation to sports, we could say. I was glad at least we had a fun match day, especially this Sunday. I mean, I enjoyed the games. I kind of forgot about all this topic for a while, which was good because it's been, you know, they've been bombarding us with all the information coming out nonstop regarding Rubiales, regarding Jenny, etc. And it's obviously a very, very delicate topic. We all know that here Rubiales has done wrong. He made a big mistake kissing Jenny in the first place, being so touchy with the players. I mean, that was very inappropriate taking into account his position and the position he occupies, you know, as in charge of the Spanish Federation, and what he did was wrong. I mean, we're all aware of that. And now he's probably going to lose his job, even though he came out with that speech. Probably made things worse, although I can understand in a sense that he is being attacked by everyone. Deservedly or not, he is being attacked by anyone. He kind of feels cornered. It happened quite a few times with the Saudi thing, with other topics that come up. They have been going for Rubiales for a long time. We know that Tebas and Rubiales can't stand each other, so obviously there's always pressures from one side and another. So, I mean, that, I think, caused him to come out with this speech, which wasn't appropriate, you know. What he had to do was to say sorry. He messed up big time, you know, and it could be maybe it was part of the celebration. He was just so happy, so excited, he didn't really think it through too much, because, I mean, a person in his position usually should be smart enough to avoid these things, but, you know, the heat of the moment, he made a really bad mistake, and he just should have admitted it without saying anything else, you know, because the first apology he gave previous to that was pretty poor, like saying that, you know, here in the Federation, everyone thought it was fine, but I guess that if people outside think it's wrong, then it must be wrong. So, I mean, that was really stupid. And then he made things worse. So, in the end, Rubiales really is messed up. He's going to lose his job. I mean, I don't see it happening in a different way. He can't continue any longer, because the players, the female women players, don't want him there. They're not going to play for the national team. And it's one thing to lose 15 players. It's another thing to lose 80 players for the national squad. And all the support he's having from everyone. So, I mean, in that sense, it's practically over. Even though he's tried to cling on right to the very end, we'll see what the sanctions are. As I said, very complicated case. It's been ongoing for the last days, and it's going to keep on going, because there's still a lot to see from perspective, you know, of what is the future for the Spanish Federation. And as you said, Bilda, De La Fuente, all these who supported him, who are clapping now, they are rejecting what he said, which is pretty much pointless. We'll have to see if they continue, you know, so we could see some very big, big changes in the Spanish Federation.
Mm. Yeah, presidency tainted with scandals and misdemeanors. Well, I think you'll all understand that we had to talk about that at the start of the pod, but happily we can now move on to the football.
Ahí está Lamin, al palo, el rechace para Lewandowski, gol, gol.
Yes.
And what a game we had at the Estadio de la Ceramica on Sunday afternoon. Villarreal 2-0 down against Barca, looking for a really tough afternoon, but then they came roaring back to go 3-2 up in the start of the second half. But then Barca themselves came back again and took the win, 4-3. A partidazo, I'm sure, man, everyone agreed. Such an entertaining game, so many talking points, tactical, personnel. Overall impressions from you, but and also we have to speak about Lamine Yamal, 16 years old, star of the show.
Yeah, I mean, we can't not speak about Lamine, because he was probably the best player, one of the best players in the match there was, because he basically gave that extra attacking breath of fresh air that the team needed, that maybe Lewandowski wasn't providing as much or other players. So, I mean, having him on so soon in the season or at such a young age and actually being such so important is pretty crazy, you know. I mean, last time I can remember something like that would actually maybe be looking towards Messi. Of course, I don't want to compare, but you do feel like this kid has something very special. I mean, we've seen a lot of talent here at Barcelona, players which succeed and don't succeed. We've had Ansu's, we've had Messi's, etc. And it feels like Lamine Yamal has something that others maybe didn't have, or maybe just a few of the ones I mentioned had, you know. So in that sense, he should be very important for this team, and he could be a future superstar if we take good care of him, if no injuries come up, if no psychological factors come up, etc., etc. If they take good care of him, he will be decisive. And going back to the game itself, it was so entertaining to watch. You said Barca went up 2-0, even though Villarreal could have gone up 2-0 themselves before that, because they had some really, really good chances at the beginning. They came out really strong and really put Barca under a lot of pressure. I mean, and it's something that tends to happen in games between Villarreal and Barcelona. They usually are very entertaining games because both teams, both managers don't really like defending back, closing down. They want to go forward, they want to have the ball, they want to generate opportunities in attack. And we saw that both defensive lines were always quite advanced, you know, taking a risk with the offside and allowing lots of spaces in the counterattack. But that's how they play, and that favors, of course, entertainment and goals. And we had plenty of those, some very nice ones. And I mean, I always love watching Barcelona play against Villarreal because I know we're up for a good spectacle, for sure.
I thought we were in for another 4-4 that we had in 2019, but we were on course for the same kind of pattern of scoring as well, 2-0 down and then ahead. But yeah, a remarkable game. Interesting, a lot of fans were not too happy to see the fullbacks that Barca started with. And of course, then it was proven because down the sides, Villarreal really did have some joy. But then at the same time, Barca's own wingers had plenty of joy themselves. We've spoken about Lamine. And then the impact from Ferran Torres off the bench. Again, 2-2 off the bench last week against Cadiz. And then again today, he looks really plugged in, doesn't he?
Yeah, Ferran is looking really sharp. He's been working a lot in this past summer, we could say, preparing physically. He's always been one of the few guys training extra days when there wasn't a session. He would come to the facilities and he would be working on himself and trying to improve. And I mean, the mentality is there because he had lost. I think that one of his main factors of not playing well was the psychological factor, I'd say. And I think he'd really felt the pressure of the fans, of people judging him not obviously responding how he'd expect or how he would want to respond. And now finally he's kind of focused. I think he was actually going to visit a psychologist, or maybe still is, you know, trying to help him get past his troubles and worries. And I think it's all really working at the moment. He's coming off on the field and he's doing fantastically well. You can tell he's playing with so much confidence. And honestly, I'm really happy because the games where Ferran has played well for Barcelona these last few seasons, he's played really well, and you could see he was a perfect fit for a team like Barcelona. But the problem is that he couldn't find that consistency. So having him start like this, it's really good, and hopefully he will become a very important player for us this season, because we need him to also. You know, we of course lost Dembele. We'll have to see how other players respond, like Ansu Fati, for example, who still, you can see he's not back to his best, and we don't really know if he is going to be back to his best or if he's actually going to leave at the end of the summer transfer market. So we'll have to see with that. So it's good to see Ferran at his best. And regarding the fullbacks, you were saying it's true that it wasn't really the best pair to have, especially Sergio Roberto. You can tell with a team that likes to attack and is so quick with the ball, he was going to suffer, and it happened, you know. And through his side, he was at fault at least in one of the goals. And Marcos Alonso on the other side, he isn't the young player he was before. He doesn't have the same pace. I maybe would have played him more as a centre back, and obviously Balde there, but there was some rumours that maybe Balde had some discomfort and couldn't play, and that's why he didn't have any minutes. So I guess that was one of the reasons, but I mean, that's also why Xavi wanted to keep Marcos Alonso, because there aren't many options at the moment to play in those fullback positions. And hopefully Cancelo will be arriving soon, because we need reinforcements in those positions.
Yeah, indeed, looks like he will arrive this week. Before the game, Laporta saying that there's a salary margin to sign more than one player, so potentially an extra one somewhere along the lines
too.
Who
could it be?
Well, yeah, that'll set the debates off all week. Twitter's not interesting enough, is it, without all that chat? But it won't be Ivan Fresneda, because he is bound for Sporting Club de Portugal.
But I think it might be another Joao also. But we'll see.
Interesting. Well, we've spoken quite a lot about Barca. We could speak more. You know, potentially Lewandowski's form again. I know he scored the winning goal here, but that was all Lamine Yamal's work. And then elsewhere, he didn't have a particularly brilliant game. So, you know, maybe Ferran forces his way into the starting line. We'll see. Decisions for Xavi to make. And, of course, Rafinha will be back fairly soon from suspension too. Let's talk then about the other partidazo on Sunday, which was at La Catedral on Sunday night. San Mamés, under the lights, in the rain, Athletic Club, 2-0 down inside 10 minutes against Real Betis. Isco running the show, bit of magic, fantastic, beautiful goal from him. His first in the league in nearly 2 years. But then Athletic, out of nowhere, came roaring back, courtesy mainly of the Williams brothers, forcing the game back onto Betis. And yeah, in the blink of an eye, they turned it around by half-time and finished rounding off 4-2 winners. What a game.
What a game, and what an unexpected result also. I mean, so many goals, I think nobody thought that would happen, and especially with a 2-0 up, Betis, you kind of felt like it would be a very tough mountain for Athletic Club to climb, even though they were at home. But surprisingly, they turned things around, as you said, in the first half with those three goals, two penalties, I guess, and in a way you have to be a bit lucky there. There was, I think, one of the plays before had a dubious offside, but in the end, it was given anyway, so they got their goals. And I mean, you mentioned him, Isco. For me, to see him play at this level is so good, because he's one of my all-time favorite players. I have to say, I've really loved Isco since his Malaga days, when he was so young and so talented, and really led that team with Pellegrini. And seeing he has again the confidence of a manager, he's playing so good. It's great to see. And Betis really need a player to be at that level to fight for those European positions. But at the same time, they really bottled it, you know, because 2-0 up after 10-11 minutes, you can't really afford to let the game escape so easily in the first half. At least it has to be in the 90 minutes, you know. They had to fight right until the end, whereas Athletic Club didn't have as much trouble doing that. The pace, as you said, of the Williams brothers really did a lot of damage, and Athletic Club in the end, you know, they were pushing harder for the goals. They had their fans behind them, and we know that their backing is always very important. And at the Catedral, many things can happen, and in the end, it worked out for them really well.
Yeah, they seem to have more intensity and more physicality, especially in that second half, and Betis seem to tire a lot quickly. So that'll be quite a concern for Manuel Pellegrini. I know he's spoken about the need for more reinforcements before the window closes. We'll see if he gets any. A word also for Unai Gomez, who came on for Athletic and scored his first goal for the club, rounding off the win to make it 4-2. A lovely moment for him there in front of the fans. So after a poor start for Athletic in the opening game and poor performance against Real Madrid, that's now two wins on the bounce. So a bit of encouragement there for Ernesto Valverde. As for Real Madrid, they kicked off the weekend on Friday night in Vigo, and they maintained their position on top of the table with 100% record. But they had to work pretty hard in Vigo. It looked like Celta were going to get that 0-0 draw in their centenary celebration week.
It's in the header, it's helped on and past the keeper. And who else was it going to be? Jude Bellingham, three games in a Real Madrid shirt, and he scored in each and every one of them. It's his fourth goal of the campaign.
Who else? Jude Bellingham, once again, making the difference. He's frighteningly good, isn't he?
What an impact he's having. I mean, I honestly would have never expected him to be so decisive already in the start of the season. We all knew that he's an extremely talented player. He was going to be, he's surely going to fit in La Liga and Real Madrid, but to do so well so early, I mean, that was very hard to predict. And I mean, it's great for Real Madrid to have a player capable of scoring these important goals already and help them stay at the top of the standings. But at the same time, it worries me a bit that they have to depend so much on Jude so early on in the season, because I mean, he isn't expected to be the goal scorer, I don't think, at least for the team, and I'm not sure if he's going to be able to keep it up. Maybe he does surprise us and he becomes this false number nine or whatever that leads the Pichichi, but at first you'd think that he isn't the man in charge of scoring all the goals, and we've seen that Vinicius might be the other person at the moment until they find a number nine, because Joselu, honestly, I think he will score goals, but I don't see him being decisive, and he's not even a starter at the moment. So,
no, he's not
of course, he's not the reference they need. He's not the new Karim Benzema. So we'll have to see what Madrid decide until the end of the transfer market, because honestly, they definitely have quality, and of course they're going to be up there. But if they want to fight for this league more comfortably than not, then I think they should try and find a number nine. But at this stage, it is true that it's not going to be easy at all. So we'll see if Bellingham can really step up all the way, if Vinicius can come back stronger, because he hasn't maybe been as outstanding in these first few games. And of course, he ended the last one injured. But we'll see how it goes for them in attack.
Yeah, a couple of points to come from that game on sort of the negative side there. As you say, Vinicius injured hamstring. The good news for that is that there's only really one game before the international break now, so he'll probably only miss that one and then be back after that break, and therefore he won't have to go and play for Brazil in the first World Cup qualifiers. So in a way, it might be a bit of a chance for him to get a rest and get properly 100% fit again. And also the penalty, Rodrigo, he had a penalty in the second half, took it, missed it. It was saved, very good save from Ivan Biar. But Ancelotti was visibly frustrated, wasn't he? He didn't want Rodrigo to take the penalty, and said after the game that was not in the plan.
Yeah, that's strange, you know. I mean, they should have at least a shooting order, you know, where each player knows who is in charge of taking the pen. I did see the ball in José Lu's hands at a point, then it went back to Rodrigo's hands. So the players weren't sure themselves. Usually it does make sense that if there's not like a main penalty kicker or shooter, then the guy who gets the foul can shoot if he has the confidence. And I understand that Rodrigo wants to step up. I think last season he did step up for a large part of the games, and he was showing he was very important for them in attack. That's why for me he's earned his starting spot this season, and he's going to be important for Real Madrid. And of course I guess he wanted to give the goal, and he was in the end the guy who got the foul, so I can kind of understand that. But it's strange that if Ancelotti didn't want him to shoot, that he did take it in the end. So I mean, they have to organize themselves there, and it also like proves what I was saying before, there isn't a clear reference goal scoring attack like there was with Karim Benzema. We all know he would have taken the penalty and there would have been no doubts, and there probably would have been a goal. So now they have to go through these extra troubles, and they have to solve it internally.
They've missed penalties in the last three visits to Vigo, interestingly, with three different takers against three different goalkeepers. So just giving it to
Jude. Great stats. That's good.
Well, that's a Mr. Chip stat, I must say. A Mr. Chip stat. But,
I thought it was Mr. Yeah. Matt. All right.
Anyway, give it to Jude next time. He'll bang it in. Everything he touches turns to gold. That'll do us for part one. It's been a pretty long part one, but we'll come back after the break. We'll round off the rest of the weekend's matches, including some more thrilling action from across the Spain. Join us soon.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. There was more goals and plenty more action across the weekend, including on Sunday. Again, there was only three goals in this game, but it was a dramatic one. Valencia against Osasuna. Valencia coming into it with 6 points out of six. Quite surprising they've had such a good start to the season. They were facing an Osasuna side who rotated a lot after their Thursday night toll in the Europa Conference League playoff. They fell to Club Brugge 2-1 at home. So Iago Barrasate rotating the pack, shuffling it up all about. And Osasuna remarkably came away with a win. And the circumstances as well were remarkable, weren't they, Roman?
Yeah, I mean, well, Osasuna are kind of used to these midweek games, we could say. Last season they did fantastically well in the Copa del Rey, so they proved that it wasn't really a problem for them, and hopefully they can keep this up. We'll see when the Copa del Rey starts, if they're still in three competitions, how they'll handle that. But at the moment, with two, I'm sure they're capable of doing pretty well. And I mean, they're showing us, you know, how good they are, how reliable Osasuna can be. You know, they're always tough to beat. You can never give them for dead or for done, you know, because in front they had a Valencia who's surprising everybody, as you said, playing really well. For me, they were one of the relegation candidates, and at the moment they're proving me wrong. Baraja has really got all the youngsters to really trust him, trust the project, and so far so good. And honestly, it felt like Valencia was going to take the win in that game because they got the 1-0 result, and then they had three or four pretty good chances, I'd say, to take it home and finish 2-1. But in the end, wonderful Nacho Vidal semi-bicycle kick, we could say.
Que viene la tormenta. Vamos a ver. Gol, 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 gol.
No me digas.
Gol, 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 gol. De Nacho Vidal. De Nacho Vidal. De Nacho Vidal.
¿Cómo ha rematado el tío?
Gol de Osasuna.
Gave them a win in the 95th minute, and that's incredible for Osasuna, and a bit of disappointment. But Valencia can, you know, leave with their heads up because they also performed well. And honestly, they at least deserved a point in that match.
Yeah, if you're looking up that goal, be careful how you Google that, because there's another Nacho Vidal in Spain that you won't want to look up. So, yeah, parental guidance moment there. Moving swiftly on, Sevilla, in contrast, they're in all sorts of trouble because they were coming into this weekend on two defeats, and unfortunately for them, it became three against Girona. Fantastic performance from Michel's men. Lovely winning goal from Alex Garcia. But it's the first time ever that Sevilla have lost their opening three La Liga matches, and they are the only team left without a single point. Roman, is it going to happen again? Are they going to really struggle to fight to survive this season?
I don't think so. I mean, it's true, of course, that there's the ghost from the past. You know, they might be thinking of what happened last season, and it's normal because it was really frightening for a moment for Sevillistas. But I just think they'll get past this, honestly. We know what Mendilibar was capable of last season. They took him all the way to the Europa League title, and he left him in a comfortable position in the standings. We all know that Sevilla still need reinforcements. Some players still have to come in. Mendilibar has already been complaining about how his squad wasn't completed, we could say, for the start of the season, how many players still had to leave. There were doubts on whether some are going or not, like Bono, for example, and also others have to come in. So we'll have to see how that ends. And once the transfer market is over and we see what squad Sevilla has and how they're playing, we can judge them a bit better. But I think it's a bit soon, and it's true that the other game they were a bit unlucky. Also, that beautiful Rakitic goal, which got cancelled. I mean, that was kind of a doubtful one. There were some moments where you weren't sure if they actually deserved more because they were pressing, they were getting good opportunities, and honestly, it just felt like the goal was missing. So honestly, Sevilla could have easily taken a draw or a win, even though for me, Girona did really well. I don't want to take away any credit because they were also fantastic, really offensive, had some great opportunities. Savio hit the post. I think it was one of those beautiful runs he made with the ball, and I mean, Girona could have also scored quite a few. So defensively, Sevilla do have to do a lot of work, but in offense, they were generating. They had opportunities, just, you know, lacked that final goal to at least get a point. But for me, things will get better. I'd still stay calm for now.
I mean, speaking of young talent, like we did with Lamine Yamal, Savinho, remarkably impressive for a teenager to come into Spain on loan from Troyes, the French club, and looks absolutely electric. And keeping Pablo Torre on the bench, really impressive from him. And also in his post-match interview, he came out and I don't think his Spanish is too good because he was still speaking Portuguese, but it's so impressive to see him sort of try and listen to the questions and respond. So, yeah, good for him. Excited to see Girona. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the best teams to watch in Spain, I would argue, under Michel.
Sure.
So, really impressive start for them. They're sitting there second in the table ahead of, I mean, right away, I could overtake them tomorrow on Monday, but at the moment, Girona up there in second. A relegation battle, early days, I know, but these two sides could well be in the mix come the end of the season. Granada against Mallorca. Granada got their first win of the season, a 3-2 win, another five-goal thriller. Morici missed another penalty for Mallorca, but he was involved in their goals. I think, again, speaking of talent, Brian Zaragoza is the one to watch for this Granada side. Fantastic goal he scored and just makes things happen, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be important for Granada to stay up in the first division, avoid relegation. They're going to need his goals. They're going to need his quality in attack. And I mean, this is a very good result for Granada. They're another of the teams I had my doubts regarding them, you know, in terms of the relegation battle. We'll see how long they can last, you know, getting these good games. And in front, they had a Mallorca, which I thought would do better. I mean, we were looking at their signings in this transfer market, and you thought with, like, Sergi Darder coming in, with Omar Mascaré, with Kyle Lahren, etc., those felt like very good signings. And they haven't really responded. Well, at least the team as a whole hasn't really responded so far. Of course, it's still, we keep saying this, it's still very soon in the season. It's just started. A lot of things have to happen. But seeing the good dynamic that Mallorca had last season with their manager and seeing the players they brought in, you would have expected a bit of a better start. At the moment, one draw and two defeats isn't great. We'll see how this evolves, but more is expected from Mallorca.
Let's see if they can kind of settle in as we get through the coming weeks. And maybe the international break will come at a good time for them. Two more games we need to mention from this weekend. We had a bit of an Andalus derby down in Cadiz, taking on Almeria. Vicente Moreno had never lost against Cadiz, and he'd never lost against Sergio González's side. But that was looking to change until the 95th minute.
¡Ay, quien un zapatazo desde la frontal del área! Con 10 contra los elementos. Se confió el Cádiz y en el descuento. Empata Kaiki con un zapatazo. Cádiz 1, Almería 1.
When Kaiki stepped up and curled in a beautiful equaliser to break Cádiz hearts. Roman, did you see this game? Any standout points for you from this?
Well, I mean, I didn't get to see the game. In this case, I only saw the highlights. But from what I saw, Almeria got very lucky. I mean, that game should have been for Cádiz. They didn't make the most of that superiority because the sending off, I mean, came quite early in the 50th minute. Silly challenge from Edgar getting sent off and really putting his team in quite a tough position. And honestly, it felt like in any moment Cádiz would, you know, close the game off, score a second and finish it off. But it was quite the opposite. Kaiki scored, as you said, that lovely goal, thumping it right past the goalkeeper and giving a crucial 1 point to Almeria, because we know that these sides crave points, and every single point they can snatch, especially if it's away from home, is super important. So that's a point Almeria might remember at the end of the season, who knows, because they could be saving them from relegation.
Indeed, very early days, but that did feel like a big moment already in the season. Edgar González had a bit of a tough start to life at Almeria. He's obviously signed from Betis. He gave away a penalty in the opening game of the season, and now he's been sent off in game three. So yeah, he'll be hoping for a bit of time to settle in as well. And finally, this was another Friday night game. It was Las Palmas against Real Sociedad. Looked a very attractive game on paper. García Pimienta against Imanol. You know, real tactical. Both sides want to play good football. Ended 0-0. Roman, was this a 0-0 that wasn't a great watch? Or was actually, it was a really entertaining game, but just didn't have any goals?
I think it had some very good moments, and I honestly think it deserved some goals, especially from Las Palmas, who for me were the better side overall. They had some very good opportunities. I think they hit the post at least a couple of times. They were generating a lot of danger and attack. Surprising, but we know that Real Sociedad are a team that is very good at closing down, quite solid defensively. It's hard to get past them and for opponents to generate, especially, I'd say, weaker opponents such as Las Palmas. I mean, they're expected to be bottom half of the standings, at least at first glance, and usually Real Sociedad are quite good at keeping them at bay. But Las Palmas, you know, they were daring, they played with a lot of confidence, they weren't intimidated by Real Sociedad at any point, and you know, they really had some very good chances. Jonathan Vieira, it's good to see that he's still that fantastic player that we once enjoyed back in the days here in La Liga, with Las Palmas. Sandro had a really good game, I thought. I'm not a big fan of his, but I have to say he did generate a lot of danger in attack for Las Palmas, and he proved to be a very important player for them in that game. And honestly, if they'd gone with a 1-0, 2-0 result or something like that, I wouldn't have been surprised, because I think Pimienta is doing a good job there, and we'll have to see what Las Palmas is capable of, but they're on a right track for me at the moment.
Yeah, I think both teams, it's kind of not really learning too much about either side. I mean, La Real have had three draws. It's kind of like, okay, what are they all about this season? I think they're capable of more, but not really showing it. And for Las Palmas, I get the sense they're going to be really good on the eye, but they haven't quite got that punch in the final third. And if you can't score goals, it's difficult to win games in the top flight. So we'll see. Hopefully both teams can kind of kick on, because as we say, they're very attractive teams to watch. That's the weekend. We have two more games on Monday involving Atletico Madrid, Rayo Vallecano, Alaves, and who's the one I've forgotten, Roman? It is,
Atletico against...
Yeah, Getafe Alaves. How can I forget one of the last? we talked about style earlier on Twitter, didn't we? And Setien Ball against Borderlas Ball, and which is more effective, which is more entertaining. We could talk for hours. But anyway, Getafe Alaves Monday evening, and then Monday night, Rayo Vallecano against Atletico de Madrid. A Madrid derby there at Vallecas should be a raucous atmosphere. Last bit of housekeeping. Again, thank you to those who have already upgraded. We would love more of you to do so. There's some great content on there exclusive for upgraded subscribers. So, Roman, your latest piece on the site is also up there. What did you write about?
Yeah, it was 15 expressions in Spanish that all La Liga fans should get to know, because I think it's fun sometimes to learn some Spanish while enjoying football. And if you ever hear Spanish commentary and you hear these certain expressions or words that are a bit weird when you translate them literally, then you get the meaning from me, and I'll help you out. And if they have any more doubts, any more questions, I can always help them with any translations they need, of course. And as you said, please subscribe. Your support is crucial for us. We need you to be there for us. And thank you for being there, of course.
Yeah, we'll be here for you all season. This Monday pod will always be free, but we'd love it if you can upgrade and enjoy all of our content throughout the week with extra articles and extra podcasts. Thank you very much for listening to this pod, and we hope you have a good week, and we hope that the football can continue to do the talking and not the off-pitch stuff. Roman, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy the week. Adios.
Thank you as always. Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.